Pull up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
Howard, thank you very much. We are back for another edition of Big Conversation Little Bar. We're here at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, California, occupying the prestigious and coveted corner booth. My name is Patrick Evans. I'm here along with my spiritual guide, my mentalist, the gentleman who...
I'm bending spoons.
You're like the Kreskin of Palm Springs.
I am. I'm the Kreskin of podcasts.
You are. Randy Flores, my co-host. How are you, Randy?
It's great to be here. It's really good to be here. The weather is fantastic. Everybody in town likes you again.
We'll see. It's been a thunderstorm later this week.
So. We like the thunderstorms. Those are okay.
Yeah, but a lot of roads close, and then people get upset.
Not in La Quinta.
No, because you guys built bridges.
Nobody goes out when it's raining.
Oh, that's a better idea.
Yeah. Hey, so there's
the only thing closes roads in La Quinta is that Iron Man thing. That shuts everything down.
No, what's about to shut down a road in La Quinta is me. I'm telling you, the city of La Quinta, the intersection of Highway 111 in Washington, is no longer safe. Fix it. Next.
Is it because it's 8 lanes wide in both directions?
It's 8 lanes wide, but it moves into one lane so you can turn right.
Okay.
And this is my Abe Simpson moment.
This is Randy's soapbox. Thank you
for
joining us.
Let's talk about you, though.
Why?
It's probably too late now as we record this, but you're in the running for the most popular radio personality in the desert.
Yes. The Coachella Valley Independent, Jimmy Vogel and his team, along with News Channel 3, we co-sponsor that. They have the best of the Coachella Valley going on, and 103.1 MeTV FM, my radio station, where I'm on 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. every Monday through Friday.
So basically what you're telling us is that they have to give it to you.
No. Oh. See, they actually, when we partnered with the CV Independent, they took away the best TV personality category because they didn't want there to be an appearance of impropriety.
Why is there no best podcast category? Clearly, we've taken over most of the television.
We would have run away with it hands down.
We have no competition.
Fire and Ice. Mm-hmm. That would have been disappointing for them, right?
No, that was a very popular podcast when the Firebirds were popular, but that I don't think is the case anymore.
Or until we started.
They're on thin ice is what I hear about that podcast.
Puck you. So.
Well, you go puck yourself.
Puck yourself. So good luck. I voted
Thank
for you.
You
8 or 9 times.
You're only supposed to vote. I did too, but...
I hope you win.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Because
more
it would
importantly,
be great
want,
to have the winner as a co-host on the podcast.
I want 103.1 MeTV FM to win because it would be a nice feather in the radio station's cap. And Brad Furr, who is one of our former guests, owns that station along with KG, so he can't lose. Both of those stations are in the running. I'm very excited to welcome our guest. This is somebody that we've been chasing after for a while, but he's hard to pin down. He's the founder of the Amdocs Film Festival. Teddy Gruya is with us today. Teddy, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. I'm honored to be with such celebrities.
You're going to be disappointed here by the end of the hour.
I'm so impressed. I actually forgot why I was here listening to the two of you because you're so entertaining and erudite that I don't want to be a part of any letdowns. So.
It would be impossible. You, first of all, we could spend a long time talking just about Amdocs, but you also are a filmmaker as well as the founder of the film festival. You just told us you were doing some judging as well as you had a film entered. So you travel all over the world for film festivals.
Mm-hmm. And have we had any guests who work for the State Department?
I don't believe so.
So, I would have probably been dismissed at this point, but...
But you got your start working for the state. Didn't you work in the embassy in Australia?
Yes, that's correct. Is that on my bio?
It
so
is.
You guys were doing your research.
It will be.
No, Randy is our research department, but you and I have known each other for a while, and I've been lucky to participate in AmDocs from time to time. But I did not realize you were a UCLA guy, but then you went on to study in Australia, and that's where you got involved in the State Department work.
Yes, I was doing a master's in international relations. Not easy to say when you're sober or not.
We can fix that too.
And I was very fortunate to get into UCLA. I was very fortunate to get into the ANU, the Australian National University, because at that time, that particular program was limited. The graduate program was limited to up to 12 people. Any given year. But I persisted and called, and I want to be in your program. And somehow I got it accepted. And there I did some volunteer work for Youth for Understanding, which was the largest U.S.-based international youth exchange program. I myself had been an exchange student years before in Denmark.
No.
And some of the people that were volunteers there were embassy staff, but I was always interested in working at state outside. So my two loves were international relations and, of course, film.
And your undergraduate degree from UCLA, you studied film and television.
That's right. But at UCLA, it's not easy. We're on the quarterly system there. So each quarter, which is 10 weeks, is like an 18-week or 20-week semester.
Wow.
But you do three of them.
Right.
And you're not really, you can take some coursework, but they're very much into the breadth requirements, meaning your first couple of years you have to do, you can't just jump into film. You have to study everything else from biology to languages to English lit to history, etc. But yeah, and so I was very fortunate to get into that program. And then before I graduated, I was lucky to get work as a PA, netting $164 and some odd cents a week as a gopher.
I'm probably happy to get it.
Yeah, and you use your own car. And I was the hardest working person on the set, but there were people that would have died to get that opportunity. Yeah. I was very fortunate. I hope this isn't boring you, but I was very fortunate to get that job. Part of it was related to my Danish language experience, because my dad knew Lou Garfinkel, who was a writer of The Deer Hunter.
Wow. Okay.
And he called in. God bless my dad. He said, can you help it with my son with something? And he said, with what? You can have connections in Hollywood, but you still have to earn your chops. So he said, I know a woman who's a producer, and she's got a film coming up. It's a knockoff on Conan the Barbarian. And maybe because he learned Danish. She's from Denmark, but in Hollywood, maybe he can take her to lunch. And that's how it started.
Okay.
As far as getting my first break working there. So my youth exchange experience helped.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. That's a pretty big move, obviously, becoming a foreign exchange student.
Yeah.
Was this something as you grew up in the family? Was the family saying, hey, you got to go out and explore? Was this something you came up with on your own?
Your partners are pretty smart here on the set.
I'm just a pretty face.
I think you can relate, Patrick, because you've done a lot more traveling recently, especially since you've gotten married with this lovely woman who has Lithuanian origins, correct?
And is a saint.
She is a saint.
No, I heard she makes him a lot better. But yeah, the desire, I think, came at the age of 12 to 13. I remember being in geography class. We had that back then. It was probably seventh grade. And they'd have a map and you had to do capitals and stuff. And I was always it's like spelling bee or something. I was the champion. And my father came from Europe. But the interesting thing, so I was intrigued by anything foreign. I thought I wanted something always better than where I lived in Northern California, which is, of course, a very idyllic environment.
Yeah, it's a terrific spot.
But it wasn't enough. I intuitively knew in my deepest soul that I wanted to experience something else. And so if I could have gone sooner, I would have. But it was my senior year of high school. And of course, related
the year to go.
Yeah, part of your question, most people are like, you can't leave. It's like that line in that film that Bruce Dern was in called Smile many years ago. And they said, you can't leave Santa Rosa. And so they were all telling that to me, and I couldn't wait to get out. And so I thought I was going to go to the south of France to play tennis. And they lost my application, and there were only two. So I'm like calling, like I told you, I called Australia. I want to get into the program. I called and I said, oh, everything's closed. You can't go. There's no French-speaking programs because that was the most desirable, and you had to be like ultra straight A's. And they said Paraguay's left and Denmark. And I was like, in retrospect, Paraguay would have been really intelligent
pretty cool
for the
place.
Language.
Yeah.
But I somehow was open-minded at the age of 17 because I was a little, you're spoiled coming from California, the sunshine. And then I start reading about Denmark. I'm like, this looks cold and rainy and overcast. But I said, you know what? Let's do it. Let's try something different. So
what was that experience? You get over there.
So what happens, and I was there for about 13 months. There is a difference, by the way, whether you're in high school or college. You see a lot of college students that, and that's fine, I'm not knocking it, but they do a semester abroad. And that's a lot different than doing a year abroad because you're basically partying that time that you're away. Then it takes a while to really enculturate yourself into the society that you're visiting. Because in the beginning, a lot of people are interested in speaking English because they want to improve their skills. But then they get tired of that. It's a natural human reaction. So you have to start learning the local language. Yeah. It was probably 8 or 9 months, and I didn't have any Danish background.
Wow.
As far as language skills.
You were living with a local family?
So I lived with a local family, and fortunately, my Danish mother was also, this was the tough part, she was also the English teacher at the gymnasium that I went to school. And so I would say something in Danish, and she'd go, night. It's always constantly correcting you. But that's frustrating, and yet, it's a good thing that someone is on top of you.
It helps with that full immersion, that immersive experience. I was an exchange student and went to Italy in my junior year of high school. And
wow, I didn't know that. That's fantastic. So parlate italiano.
Un po'. I went on to study Italian at the University of Virginia. And my Italian professor told me that I was her cross to bear. So I was not a good student.
It's interesting because you were probably like me in college. They really require you to do, it's not just going to the class 3 days a week. You have to do the labs, right?
Yeah.
And
are you conversational now? Could you go back and start a conversation?
Yeah, det kan jag gott. Jag kan gott tala dansk. In fact, people
I think that was yes.
I see people... I don't mean this arrogantly because what you say is fluent or fluent. As far as reading a scientific journal might be a challenge, I could read it, but as far as perfectly smoothly, it's another issue. But people that I meet that are somehow there's Danes, there's only a little over 6 million Danes. Yeah. But in our industry, Denmark's like a superpower in the arts, television and particularly film. So I meet them and I remember going to a festival in Copenhagen for work, and you go to the registration and to get your passes and all this. And there's some hotshot people, some girls from women that worked in the industry that flew over from New York. And I'm in this one queue, this one line, and I'm speaking Danish to the people that are setting me up. And they look over at me and they go, what? I said, oh, I studied a little bit on the plane on the way over. And then I turned and walked away.
That's outstanding. Obviously, it must have been an enormous formative experience for you, spending that length of time in Denmark and away from your family and outside of the United States. Now, because the senior year in high school is...
That's a big year.
You grow a lot. Yeah.
My dad, even though he was European, he loved me. And he offered to send me to Hawaii for 2 weeks instead of going off to Denmark. And I didn't take the bait. But it's actually reverse, as you probably understand. It's a little bit reverse cultural shock coming back. But I'm just blessed. And the Australia thing, by the way, so I did that work with those exchange programs as a counselor to other students later. But all they did was encourage me. I applied to work and I had to go through it's much easier today, unfortunately, but I went through a 9 to 10 month top secret security clearance.
Not and required anymore, right?
It's a lot changed after 9/11. They made things easier, more expeditious, and that's another discussion. But because they needed more, supposedly more people as far as monitoring what's going on out there, national security. But I was just very blessed to work in that environment because I was surrounded by Australia. That's a plum posting. And
yeah, very
so
much
I was,
so.
Yeah, so I was like the youngest guy there, but I was surrounded by crack professionals. My getting to work in Hollywood and then getting to work at the embassy in Australia. These are some of the greatest diplomats in the world because they'd had to serve in other tough locations. So yeah, I learned a lot.
To the lousy places first.
Yeah. I mean, if you have certain, there are exceptions, but typically you've got to do a couple of those postings.
Yeah.
They're not always bad. The hardship post.
Well, this is something else we have in
Italy's
common.
Italy's not one.
Italy's not a hardship post. No, we have this in common. I passed the foreign service exam and I was a provisional employee of the State Department for a while.
So you just didn't follow through on the remaining interviews.
Yeah.
That's a huge deal, Patrick.
When your dream's to be a meteorologist.
He does it as much better than me. The thing about Patrick Evans, not that you need me to say this, but...
Here we go.
He's an exemplar of community service. He's not being paid except for maybe a meal at some
and he'd vouch for that.
Yeah.
No, but he's done a lot. He continues to do a lot. And the thing is, I think that's what it's all about. And I think if you have notoriety, now there's debates on that, just dribble. And I disagree with that assessment. Just do the weather. No, I mean, life is short. We're here to do more for our communities.
Yeah.
And so I really have a great deal of respect for
And he
that.
Certainly has. But how are you involved in the local community besides AMDOC?
So I am part of I'm on the board for the foundation of the Plaza Theater.
Oh, that's right.
The restoration of the theater. And of course, AMDOC's really takes up a tremendous amount of time. We do a lot of, I'm thinking off the cuff here, sorry. We do a lot of education outreach. Our development exec, Leighton Jin, helps with that too. But the other day, for example, I did a workshop for Riverside County, not just our local school district, but for the entire county, offering teachers a workshop on how to make a great film. Because teachers, they have methodologies, they've got their study guides, but maybe the films could be better. And I have delicately share with them this subjective process. But that's some of the things that we do. We do a lot of education outreach, and we don't really have specific sponsors for this. We do it with our own guts and what we earn at our box office.
And you have a small team. It's not...
Our team, first of all, let's tell you this before the dirty little secret. The festival, now everyone knows about the Palm Springs International, which of course deserves a lot of acclaim in great part because they do well at the ticket office. But of course, I think their greatest notoriety local and in Southern California is the gala that they have because they're able to bring in the publicist, bring in a lot of stars during the award season. And I know Patrick's a part of that on the red carpet. So everyone knows that festival. But interestingly, the American Documentary and Animation Film Festival, AMDOCS, is the largest of those two niches on the West Coast. We just happen to be in Palm Springs as well.
Right.
We screened well over 200 films this last year. We had over 300 industry guests. So now, that being said, as far as the team behind it, I'm full-time. And then we have some other directors like Leighton, who is full-time.
Has he accomplished much over the last couple of years?
The thing about Leighton Jin, he's pretty dynamic in always coming up with some ideas. Do I Do we always adopt them? No, because some of our resources are limited, but he's got a lot of great intuitive ideas that he continues to pursue.
He's had his hands in a lot of stuff in this desert.
In order to grow our event. But we do have a team of different, as we get closer, like we're already having meetings now. So we have different department heads. So running a film festival is really making a film or building a house, because you have to have all these different elements that go into the final product that most of the public don't see. It's not just me picking films and then we screen them. It's a real complex process. At least the way we do it, it's complex. So they're really incredible people that have been with us, that have volunteered since our very first season for over 15 years that I've been working with. And we're always seeking new blood to work.
And I imagine the people making the submissions know that you guys do it differently than a lot of other places.
Look, there's a, I don't know if I've told Patrick this before, but there's a Yelp for film festivals, and I didn't know that existed. So the truth is, what we do is because we think it's the best way to do it. Some of it is a compilation, if you will, of the travels that I've had at other festivals, what I think they do well, and maybe what they're not doing so well. So some of the festivals I went to recently, I was in Australia, I was in Tacoma. They're all wonderful people. They had absolutely no industry events, not even an opening night party where they offer you a beer. So
what's the point?
They just had you go to the screenings. And I think part of it's expenses and whatnot. Yeah. And we heavily invest in, we have the audience element as far as watching films. And then we have the industry element, and we take care of those people so that they have, the cliche is networking, but that's what they do. And every night we have something different. Maybe there's a party at a mid-century style home, or there's something going on in a canyon, things that are identifiable with the desert so that these people have a unique experience outside of the viewing rooms.
And that pops up your Yelp review.
So yes, thank you for bringing me back.
Once we found out it was there.
Yeah, I love that.
You can look that up. Yes, we're rated in the top 100 consistently out of over 14,000 festivals in the world.
Wow.
So
it's remarkable, we get
the 5 stars consistently.
Yeah. What, you'd been making films and you'd been working in television as well, but what made you decide to found the film festival itself, the Amdocs Festival?
So that was the embryonics of that was the Supples, whom you know, that
Rick and Rosine.
Yeah, they bought, owned, and renovated what was originally the Camelot Theaters. And because of that location, not because of their content or programming or management, but because, in my opinion, because of that location, which is not walking, no tourist or whatever going to walk, you have to drive there. It's not, you're not going to come upon it like the plaza.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is a blessing for them, for people that are like, what can we do in town tonight?
Yeah.
So the Camelot didn't have that. And they asked me, what is it we can do to try to help build some more visibility? And that's how it started. They thought it would be just like a little weekend event. I said, I'm not going to get involved and walk away from my filmmaking unless we're going to try to make it the biggest and the best. I didn't mean it arrogantly. If I'm going to pour 110% into it, I want it to be something that's great. And so that's how it started. They asked, and we think we fulfilled, or we continue to try.
Yeah.
What are the requirements for a submission?
He knows all the expressions. That's great. We're not, excuse the expression, premier whores. A lot of festivals.
Did you know that expression?
It's not a requirement. It's typical, unless it's a retrospective honoring a great filmmaker who might have a body of work. It has to have been completed within the last 3 years. And it can't have played within a 70-mile radius. So that would include Riverside, which sort of had a festival, and of course, Palm Springs, because we want to give more filmmakers opportunities. So we tend not to double up something that might already play it here, even though they want to be at Amdocs. So that's the only criterion. What's interesting over the years, because of our reputation, I'd say that a good 70% or so end up being premieres, certainly world or North American premieres.
Wow.
So yeah, and then there's different categories. We have documentary feature, doc short, animated work. We even have music video now, which is fun.
This is, I'm sure, going to be difficult, but throughout the years that you've been doing this, are there a few that have just really stood out for you that you would use as an example of what Amdocs is about? And if the answer is no.
It's virtually impossible. It's virtually impossible every year because I do get this. Your friend Bruce Fessia used to ask this bloody thing. Okay, give us.
What an ass Bruce is.
Yeah, give us the top 10 films of this. Right. And I said, how am I going to? I said, I understand.
It's a very good Bruce, by the way.
Yeah, the don't misses. And I'm like, how can, if we have over 200 films, how am I going to give you this list?
Yeah, it's hard
in fairness to everyone else that's also a part of the festival, because it's always subjective anyways. But I would try to give him. No, there's a lot of works that stand out. We've had everything from Oliver Stone, our first season, where we did, I think, five or six, because he's really into documentaries now, by the way. But he'd already done at that point, I think, four or five when we screened all those, whether it was the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He happened to have been there when there was a horrific bombing at a mall or restaurant type thing. And then we had Peter Bogdanovich, who's, of course, a famous director and even did some acting.
Right, he was in The Sopranos.
That's right. Which is interesting. I only in this last year binged all of those seasons, and I oh, there's Peter. He was the friend. He was the other doctor, psychiatrist.
He was the psychiatrist.
He was very psychiatrist. Good.
Yeah, he was very good in that.
I was working on a documentary about Cloris Leachman, and we went and interviewed him during COVID, right before he passed away, and he gives a lot of insight as far as when he was casting her for The Last Picture Show, which she got the Oscar for. And he said when she first came in, she came in with a dog and four kids. And he was like, oh no.
This isn't going to work. How about surprising submissions from a group that you were just shocked that they put something together, or a part of the world that put something together that you hadn't seen a submission from before?
You should probably have sent me an email preparing me for that one.
Let's go back even further then.
I don't know about any surprises. I do look for that. This is a great question in a roundabout way. It was also part of that workshop I did for the teachers, because it's like anything that you create, you want to find a hook, because the stories are already out there. So what's different? What's different about the AIDS crisis that hasn't already been shared? What's different about the Holocaust that hasn't already been shared? What's different about veterans returning from conflicts and having to deal with PTSD that hasn't already been shared? And so I'm looking for
the what's different.
Yeah, the hook. And so that's why we think, maybe it sounds arrogantly, but Amdocs is a little bit different. And that's why I'm viewing over 2,000 films each year. That's part of why I'm traveling too. Most of the films are coming to us now. And in the beginning, I had to go and search for stuff. But we're really proud that way over 90% of the films that come to us directly, I don't have to scout them. Or we do reach out to people, like we had Sean Penn a couple of years ago.
You always find amazing, be it your opening night, but throughout the film festival, you always bring in some really interesting guests, and some people may not associate them with documentaries.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's plenty of star power people that are getting involved, the actors that I was prepared for this. You see it a lot, and you guys can watch the film credits on Netflix or Hulu or HBO, whatever, but you'll see that a lot of the actors, and that's fine, they want to start to whet their appetite or get some chops directing, and they'll take on documentary subjects. Sean was not necessarily directing the film, But it was really his film that he was a part of in Ukraine. And I felt it was, I wasn't personally in love with that picture, although when I saw it again on opening night, it got better. This was a Vice production, so they do a lot of this choppy,
yeah,
edgy action type cutting. But Sean was so engaging and such a sincere human being, because he is, Leighton will tell you, because I think he was in the front row maybe photographing it, and we were limited. I had to moderate. I had to ask the questions. It wasn't open to, the audience was there, but we didn't want to do the Q&As. It was just too complicated, and his people didn't want that. But that doesn't mean we didn't ask relevant questions. And he was affected emotionally. That's how sincere he was. I would ask him questions about people. And the two pilots that he really got to know that ended up flying F-16s were two of the guys that got killed. One during the screening, and then subsequently. So he's very passionate. And of course, the other thing, when I was talking about doing more for your community, not just dribble, that guy represent, because we made a donation to his organization. I don't know if you know what that is, but CORE. And they go, they're like the first on the ground. They help with hurricanes. They were the first on the ground in Haiti. They did injections, COVID kits at Dodger Stadium. I think they gave out 500,000. They helped people.
Wow.
They go to hurricanes. They do
everything.
He walks the talk.
Yeah.
And I only respect that. And I'd heard things about Sean in advance. I'd met him a couple times, but I was told, oh, be careful, he's not going to show up. So I was, Patrick's talking about how important, how great it is you've had these people, but it's not easy to get them. They might have scheduled, they love festivals, typically actors, but they're going to do the paid gigs. So it's really a function of timing for us too. Leighton knows I struggle with this every season. And most documentary festivals, they honor maybe a director, but not necessarily the Oliver Stones or Michael Moores or Bogdanoviches. It's not easy to get
them. It's hard to get them, yeah, sure.
So the star directors, and rarely do they get these stars.
But you've managed to do it pretty regularly.
Yeah, we have a lot of goals this season on our 15th annual.
I love
annual.
The smile when you said that. It was just kind of,
yeah, it's paranoia, insecurity. Because a lot of people ask that question, who you got this year? And so then there's an expectation, and that's a challenge. Sometimes we mix it up. Last year, we opened with themes that were related to dance and music and things to still entertain for the audience.
Yes.
But yeah, we've even had John Avildsen, who was a director of Karate Kid and Rocky. He was there, but a lot of people didn't know who he was.
Yes.
And I'm like, these are two pretty seminal, high-grossing
films. You probably heard of these films.
Big movies.
So yeah, they like the stars, typically. I remember I was at the film festival at the after party, and what's his name? The guy who did Brokeback Mountain, the guy from Taiwan.
Ang Lee.
I met him. No one recognized him. They were all jumping over chairs to get to Brad Cooper. And Ang Lee couldn't have been, but I recognized him. And we were having a drink and no one came up, but he couldn't have been more gracious. So yeah, that goes in. If you're worried about selling tickets, that's an issue. That's not our premier thing that we're focused on, but we want to recognize these people that have contributed so mightily to this incredible art form.
Yeah, the star power does help draw people in, but I think you've crafted a film festival that speaks more about the genre and the quality of film that you bring in. The star power is always nice for opening night or for the Q&A, but I think it's the consistent quality of the films.
Yeah, and the stories. And that's why I apologize. I can't really answer you. I did it in a roundabout way.
We'll get you back for another episode.
Yeah, a question I want to transition away from the film festival and talk about your own personal filmmaking. Tell me about some of the things, the projects that you've been most happy with, most proud of, and what are you working on next?
I was reminded by one of my best friends whose name is Patrick. He looked it up because I shot my first feature here, because it was so difficult to try to get people to read a screenplay. It wasn't a documentary. And he reminded me that the writer for Variety called it abysmal.
Oops. And that wasn't the name of the film.
No. And it was shot locally, but one of his, because convenience, it wasn't set locally. It could have been anywhere USA, this particular story, following these four disenfranchised youth trying to make it in whichever way, either illegitimately or through love or through whatever. And this guy, he said they could have shown more of the Palm Springs landscape. We actually did, but that was, again, not part of the story. So that was one of his criticisms. And part of the reason I ended up going to documentaries is because it was so expensive. It was shot with film. So everything we did, we had craft service. I had to pay SAG insurance for the actors. We had a crew, even though it was small, but it caught whoever I could bleed money from, and of course myself. But I wanted to continue to create, and I looked at documentary because you could shoot things with video at that time and still make a film without a huge crew or dealing with lab cost. So that's how I got into documentaries. And at that time, the first film I did was, which ended up winning some awards. It was called Why Vivaldi, Perché Vivaldi. And so I was at a party in Palm Springs. I don't know what your times, I hope I'm not boring you. After I'd made this other abysmal film. They said, oh, you have to come to this party. There was someone in the movie colony. It was a sales. I was the only filmmaker there. They said, oh, it's going to be all these industry people. And I was the only one there. And some guy who worked at NASA in Pasadena, you know, the JPL, really sharp guy who loved music, but he was also a rocket scientist, literally. And he said, what's your next film? And he said, I have an idea. Everyone has an idea, right? And I might have 10, and I still am trying to focus on one. But of course, I politely listened. And he says, you should do a film on Vivaldi. I knew about Quattro Stazioni. I knew about the Four Seasons, but which everyone does, because Vivaldi was basically the Beatles of the Baroque period. Yes. And then Bach slightly after. And I kind of listened, but at some point, I'm done. Okay, nice meeting you. But I went home. I don't know, something told me to buy some discs. And I bought 7 or 8 things of Vivaldi. And it's like that scene where Salieri is listening to Mozart, and he's loving him and hating him at the same time. But I'm on the ground next to the speaker, and I'm turning up the volume. I'm probably losing my hearing, but I'm getting closer to the speaker, and I'm mesmerized. I'm blown freaking away. And I'm like, I don't know what the story is yet, but I'm going to write a period piece about Vivaldi. And it had been done once or twice before, but not very well. So I went, very short order. I went to Venice in February, which was the worst time of year, but probably the best time of year. It was flooding in San Marcos.
There's no tourists there, which is the bonus.
Yeah, I wrote to someone who was specifically, they had a Baroque orchestra, and I wrote to him. He didn't really speak great English, but he said, we have a concert in a few days, and why don't you come? And there'll be a few people involved with Vivaldi, like historians and musicologists there here in Venice. And what did I do? I bought a ticket and I went. And he said, and I'm like, and I have all my luggage. It's storming outside. This is all the God's truth. It's just stormy. I don't have a place to stay. I don't know what's going on. But I'd arrived on that plane and took the little water taxi or whatever, the Vaporetto, over to San Marcos. It was somewhere near San Marcos. It was in a church that they performed. And I said, where am I? And this guy he's focused on his performance and all the accolades, and there's 300-400 people in there. And I said, where am I staying? Back to the exchange student days, right? And he says, you're going to stay with Mickey. And I said, who's Mickey? And I'm looking around, and I turn around, and it's a really diminutive lady. And she goes, here I am. And That's how it started.
And that night I became a man.
Yeah, because I was committing several years to fleshing out this story about Vivaldi. And these people dedicated their whole lives to this man. They would be my historical reference, and I'd come up with characters, but they would read the drafts and say, no, this didn't happen. That's BS. But all the people that became consultants were such interesting characters, like this one musicologist who spoke perfect Danish, coincidentally. My mother was Danish. He was a professor of music at University of Liverpool. So I went up there and interviewed him and got details. The point is, I was working on the narrative screenplay, and at some point I said, these people are interesting characters themselves. So that's why Vivaldi? Why are you guys committing your life to him? So that Mickey, she quit. Her father was an Anglican, high up in the Anglican church in England, and she left, became a Catholic because she was so in love with Vivaldi. And she would volunteer. She moved to Venice, where Vivaldi was born, and volunteered at the church that he went to and all this stuff, like the candles. But she taught herself pidgin Italian, and then would study the logs, the daily calendar logs of a place. This is what's interesting. This is the Hollywood story, but I've written it, so no one needs to steal it. Everyone knows about the Four Seasons, but he became, because he was the oldest son in his family, and it was typical in Italy that the oldest son goes to the church, and they didn't have any money, so he would be the provider. And he also, the interesting thing, I learned a lot doing this research, because composers then were like artists that might be commissioned to do the Evans family. And a lot of these rich Venetians had their own little orchestras, so he would be paid and he would compose for them. So he was providing for the family. And what happened in Venice, the aristocracy said, listen, in that culture, kids were born out of wedlock, or they might have a deformity, and they would toss them into the canals.
Wow.
Because they were illegitimate. So the people with the say said, this is a little inhumane, so let's create a school for them, a place that they would live. And that became of La Pietà, and it was for girls. And Vivaldi was hired to be their music teacher. Pretty incredible.
That's amazing.
And they became some of the great musicians in Europe under his tutelage.
I had no idea about that story.
So that's the basis of the screenplay. And then all these people that were the historians, I went out and interviewed them. And that became the genesis of the documentary. So I made the documentary before the actual film.
Wow. What are you working on now?
So now I just finished a short documentary that's played in a couple festivals. I was in Australia a couple weeks ago where it played in Melbourne and the Tacoma one, and it was in Greece. It's been declined by a number of festivals as well, I have to tell you. But it's called Memory Collector, and it's about a guy who grew up in La Quinta. He doesn't live here anymore, but he was a projectionist, and he was a very quiet, gentle man who loved rabbits. And he used to go to the Salvation Army or to estate sales, and he would collect for 25 cents or for free VHS videos. And he played one, and it showed a family memory of a child that was born and just came home to this new couple. A home movie, as we would call it. No identifiable thing. So he said, I'd like to find a way to return these memories to these people. And I saw his post on Facebook one late night. There were two people that looked at it. I said, there's a nice little movie, a nice film here. You know, what, you know, inspired this guy to try to help these people? And he was able to locate them, even though there was
nothing. That's a great story.
Yeah, so that's what the film is. It's called Memory Collector. That's new. I'm working on another little short narrative film, but I just completed a film called The Quest, which is a contemporary Don Quixote thing that I'm absolutely in love with. And now I'm working on but no one's seen it yet. But I'll share it with Patrick and you if you're interested.
Breaking news.
It's a nice, inspiring story. And then I'm working on a new outline. I don't want to bore you, but it'll be a little bit for a little bit younger audience. Another Cyrano de Bergerac. What was that film they did so well back in the late 80s with Daryl Hannah?
It was Cyrano.
No. And Steve Martin was in it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is a little bit like that, but it's got, doesn't have the long Roxanne. Nose and all that. Roxanne, that was a huge film. But at any rate, this is a little more contemporary. It deals with a girl who falls for a boy band type, and she can't speak English, so she needs to learn English because she thinks that's her entree to meeting this guy. So yeah, and then of course, Amdok. That's what we're constantly working on.
You mentioned something earlier about everybody's doing docs now. When I turn on Netflix, is it just my imagination or my algorithm? Or am I just seeing a ton of documentaries available now?
Absolutely.
And is that because of the cost of making them?
I think they're cheaper to make in general, although some of the budgets that we look at for our film, we have a film fund pitch competition, are outrageous. So, Teddy, I just got an interview with Hillary Clinton. I said, okay, but what else? So you want $900,000 and you sit and you point a couple cameras at them. You're not being honest. If you've got her, you can make it for appreciably less, but you know, they want to pay themselves. That's great.
Yeah.
But no, you're absolutely right. And this is one of the issues, though, I have with those films. Now, Netflix is interesting because one of the people we honored was Joe Berlinger, who's a huge director now, and he gets a lot of Netflix contracts. He did the one on Tony Robbins that was really successful on there, but he does a lot of the crime ones, the Ted Bundy stuff like that. And he's also gone into some narrative stuff that he's done very well. But they limit who they work with. So you'd think there's a lot more opportunities because that's the dirty little secret is what you said. Docs are big, so someone's making money off them. And if you go to the gym, I told this to Patrick before, they might talk about making of a murderer instead of, which is that's what really got Netflix like this.
Yeah.
It skyrocketed and it became the model, the episodic documentaries series. They're not going to talk about Brad Pitt at the gym. They're going to talk about a documentary. That's been my experience when I'm talking to people.
Yeah.
Someone's doing well with docs. Are they doing them really well? It's another issue. I think they can do, as you say, in your business, B-roll or what I call coverage. There's a lot of, it's a North American and Canadian formula for documentaries that goes way back, journalism as far as sitting down and talking.
Yeah.
But it's not always that interesting to go from one person talking to another. They need to cut away to archival footage or something else. That's my opinion.
Yeah, there needs to be some sort of video of what you're discussing.
Yeah, and so they are a little bit, that's my critique. I think a lot of the ones that we see on those are a little bit lazy.
And I'm no expert on them, but I certainly see the same
you
thing
have an
as
eye.
Just somebody watching.
Yeah,
so I was watching something on Ted Bundy. I just threw it on yesterday, the Ted Bundy and Green River thing. They didn't do it very well, but they shed, and the University of Washington, and they had this old footage. It was Royce Hall, UCLA, that they used the stock footage of.
Really
poor. Shutterstock, yeah.
I said, that is not UW.
That's crazy.
So
I'm sure you see that stuff like that a lot, though.
I have a problem, and it drives people nuts. Shut up.
You mentioned your dad a couple of times, and did your love of the arts come from the fact that your dad was a music composer and songwriter?
We had a Super 8 camera that at a very young age I was exposed to. Let me use that. And doing home movies. But yeah, I think he never discouraged me. He didn't say you have to be a doctor, which probably in hindsight would have been definitely better for the pocketbook. But he never discouraged me. He was very proud in that regard, so I love him so much for that. He was a brilliant composer. It's one thing to be a musician, but to compose is a is another thing altogether. And he would get, he'd have an idea strike him like lightning, or I'd say touched by the hand of God. Mm. And so my sister and I, little kids, we'd be so proud because you'd hear him playing at 3 a.m. in pitch black.
Wow.
Because it came to him and he's, so that's wow. pretty inspiring stuff. And I rue the day I have to figure out to remind myself, because I'm sure you guys have experienced this, to keep a notepad or something. Now it's a thing on your notes on your phone.
Right.
In those REM or whatever moments, sometimes some brilliant things come to you, this clarity of creation. And it's one.
For me, sometimes not so brilliant. I've read stuff that I've written. It's,
what the hell was I
drinking last night?
No, but at least you had it. So it might only be 1 out of 100 things, but it might be that one that we were talking about that has the
good
hook.
Point.
Yeah. Like you said, the touch by the hand of God.
Yeah.
That kind of idea.
Yeah.
Teddy, thank you so much. We wish you a great deal of success with, this is the 15th edition of Amdocs.
It's our 15th, and we keep up to date. We're in a couple weeks up in Alaska doing a satellite event. We're currently looking for volunteers or team members, as we like to call them, whether they're drivers or they want to be in the theater or maybe they have social media skills, whatever. It doesn't matter the age. We'd love for you to reach out to us. I think you'd really enjoy and dig what Amdocs does.
What's the best way for people is they want to volunteer?
So they can, if they forget, if, I don't know if you guys post something on your thing, but they can reach us at info@amdocfilmfest.com, or they can look, they'll find it somehow on the website if they don't remember the emails. Thank you guys so much. It was really a terrific experience being here with you today. And if you will offer, we've done it before on TV, but we'll offer some 5-6-for-5 pass. We don't do those anymore, do we, Layton? But we'll offer a couple, we'll offer you a couple free 2-day passes to come to Amdocs. So if 5 of your listeners reach out to you, I beg your pardon, and you let us know, we'll offer that gratis.
I hope both the people who listen.
We have a lot of listeners. Actually, I think we'll have a lot of interest in that.
I think your program is absolutely stellar. I'm very impressed. 2 free, uber intelligent fellows, and I hope more people listen to what you do.
Thank you. It's definitely been
a joy to be with you.
Well, having you on here certainly will help that, and I hope it hasn't hurt you too badly doing this podcast.
You're all great fellows. Thank you so much again.
Our thanks to our guest, Teddy Gruya, the founder of the Amdocs Film Festival. Randy, thank you. Always great.
Another good week. We made it through another one.
Was phenomenal. John McMullen, you pressed all the right buttons this week. Thank you, sir, our producer. Our thanks to Skip Page and his team here at Little Bar. Nicely done. This is Big Conversations, Little Bar. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. On behalf of the entire team, I'm Patrick Evans. Thanks for listening.
Big Conversations, Little Bar is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. This podcast is available in audio and video format. Visit our website at www.bigconversationslittlebar.com. New episodes are released every Monday. Athletes and dreamers, stars of the screen, leaders and builders, and all in between. Conversations, Little Bar, at Big Conversations, Little